Namaha, all obeisances to Vyam unto you, my Lord, Anantaya, for everlasting, transcending the three phases of time, past, present, and future, Dorvitarkaya Atma Karmane. Unto you who perform inconceivable activities. Nirgunaya, which are all transcendental. Free from the inebriety, or inebriety, depends how you want to talk, of material qualities. Inebriety. Well, you should change it. Inebriety is a little bit different from, of course, contamination is probably a better word than inebriety is usually when you get intoxicated with something. But, I don't know, who knows. Guna Ishaya. Unto you who control the three modes of material nature. Sattvastaya. Who are in favor of the material quality of goodness. Cha, also, sampraptam, at present. My Lord, all obeisances unto you, who are eternal, beyond time's limit of past, present, and future. You are inconceivable in your activities. You are the master of the three modes of material nature, and being transcendental to all material qualities, you are free from material contamination. You are the controller of all the three modes of material nature, but at the present, you are in favor of the quality of goodness. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto you. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead controls the material activities manifested by the three modes of material nature. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Nirgunam Guna Bhoktricha. Supreme Personality of God is always transcendental to the material qualities, Sattvagun, Rajagun, and Tamagun. But nonetheless, He is their controller. The Lord manifests Himself in three features, as Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshvara. To control these three qualities. He personally takes charge of Sattvagun as Lord Vishnu, and he entrusts the charge of Rajagun and Tamagun to Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. Ultimately, however, he is the controller of all three gunas. Lord Brahma, expressing his appreciation, said that because the Lord had now taken charge of the activities of goodness, there was every hope that the demigods would be successful in fulfilling their desires. The demigods were harassed by the demons who were infested with tamoguna. However, as Lord Brahma had previously described, since the time of Sattvagun had now arrived, the demigods could naturally expect to fulfill their desires. The demigods are supposedly well advanced in knowledge. Yet they could not understand the knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Lord is addressed here as Anantaya. Although Lord Brahma knows past, present, future, he is unable to understand the unlimited knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This ends the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 5th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam entitled, The Demigods Appeal to the Lord for Protection. Namastubhyam anantaya Dharvitarkyatmakarmane Nirgunaya Guneshaya Sattvastaya Chasampratam. O my Lord, all obeisances unto you. You are eternal, beyond time's limit of past, present, future. You are inconceivable in your activities, and you are the master of the three modes of material nature. And being transcendental to all material qualities, you are free from material contamination. You are the controller of all three of the modes of nature, but the present you are in favor of the quality of goodness. Let us offer our respectful obeisances unto you. In the Bhagavad Gita, it mentions that there are five topics in the Bhagavad Gita, namely Ishvara, Jiva, Kala, Karma, and Prakriti. That is, Ishvara is the controller, Krishna. And, of course, Kala is time, Prakriti is nature, Jiva is the living entities, conditioned living entities, and Karma, the activities that result from fruitive activities. Out of the five, four are eternal, namely time, Ishvara, Jiva, and Prakriti, and only one of them is temporary, namely karma. But under the control of time, and time, Krishna says, kalosmi bharatarshva, time I am. Krishna is time. Now that takes a little meditation. In other words, time is the thing that changes everything. And Krishna is that person who has the energy called time, which represents him, that changes everything. It's directly under Krishna's control. Of course, when we say Krishna, means Krishna's expansion. And when Krishna speaks in Bhagavad Gita, he's not always speaking as Krishna holding a flute. He's speaking in his different incarnations. And time is under the control of the person who's manifested time, ultimately Karana Dakshaya Vishnu, because in the course of time, the universe is created and dissolved by that incarnation or expansion of Krishna. But under the control of time, which is, as Prabhupada mentions when he was with Professor Urquhart at Scottish Church's College, Professor Urquhart was saying, how can we believe that there's justice in the world? Because after all, you believe in karma or reincarnation. But how can there be karma? Because if you do something, there has to be a witness in order to provide evidence by which you can make a decision. Or the judge can make a decision. But where is that witness? So how can there be karma? Well, then Prabhupada later on found out, if he didn't speak up at that time, but he said that he later on found out there is a witness. Upadrasta namanta cha bharata bhokta maheshvara paramatmati chapyuto dehesmin purusha para, that there's another in this body besides the soul, kshetra kshetragya jnanam chak antara Kshetra, Kshetragyam, Jnanam. Well, that's the last verse. Kshetra, Kshetragyam, Jnanam. 13th chapter. Kshetragyam, Chapimam, Vidi, Sarva, Kshetra, Shibharata. Kshetra, Kshetragyam, Jnanam, Yattar, Jnanam, Tamama. Kshetragyam, Chapimam, Vidi. Kshetra, this body, which is our field of experience or activity, Kshetra Gyam Chabim Sarva Kshetra Shibharata. Sarva, that there's another, besides the one soul in the body, there's another soul known as the super soul. Kshetra 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 Gyanam. Three modes. Kshetra, Kshetra, yeah. kshetragyam chapimam vedi. You should know that there's another. Oh, you should know that I'm also the knower in all bodies. Kshetra gyam chapimam vedi sarva kshetra shubharata, in all bodies. Kshetra kshetra gyanam yat tad gyanam mamam tada. And to understand this body is knower is called knowledge. That is my opinion. So Krishna also says he's also with everyone. He also says, I know everyone, but no one knows me. In other words, Krishna is sitting there as a witness. He's aware of everything that we're doing, but most people are unaware of him. If someone wants to become a spy, then one should take lessons from Krishna. Only Krishna can be everywhere, and no one knows that he's there. Not only that, but all our agencies, whether it be NSA, I think it's called, whatever it is, whatever our spying agencies are that's trying to track everyone, they don't want to hear about Krishna. They don't want to know about the spy. And even you tell them, give them a Bhagavad Gita, sell it to them, tell them there's another agent, he's everywhere, he's spying on everyone, they don't want to hear about him. They want to forget about him. That's called perfect spying. Even you expose him to the intelligence agencies, they don't have enough intelligence to understand him. But the fact he's there, and he's under the control of time, that the three modes of material nature are being manifested. At the end of this universe, when the living entities merge back into Karna, Dakshai, Vishnu, then there is no time, because time, material time, because time is unmanifested. Because, although time is eternal, is one of the eternal things, but it's the three modes of material nature, when they're not manifested, then time doesn't seem to have its influence. It's not exerting any influence. But when the material universe is created, then under the purview of time, the three modes of material nature manifest themselves, and therefore the activities of karma come into being. So it starts with, well, Krishna, of course, manifesting his energies in the material world under the purview of time. The time has to manifest the three modes of material nature, and therefore the inspiration for karma comes into being. So it's significant that although everyone is being controlled by time in the material world, and therefore under time the three modes of material nature become manifested, but they become manifested with the opportunity to perform karmic activities. But karma can be superseded by devotional service. In other words, yastva indra gopam apavendra mahosu karma bandana rupa avinoti noti karmadi Bindu Bhaja Bhakti Bhajam Govindam Adi Purusham Dhamahang Bhujami. Yes, to Indra Gopam Apavendra Mahopsu Karma. From the Indra Gopa germ up to the Indra, they're all suffering or enjoying, supposedly, the results of their karma. Except for one who's engaged in Bhakti Bhajam, in the devotional service of Krishna. Then the influence of karma is not there. But then one may wonder that it appears that the devotees are also sometimes suffering in the material energy. And it may appear like that, but actual devotees don't suffer under the material energy because they're in the spiritual energy. And the spiritual energy sometimes manifests activities in the material world, and which are actually spiritual, but appear to us like material. Like Prahlad Maharaj is being tortured by his father. But if he was under the material energy, he would have died. But because he was under the spiritual energy, he wasn't affected by it. Now, we ourselves can't claim to be outside of the realm of the material energy. As a matter of fact, we can't even sometimes claim that we're even in goodness. What to speak of outside of material energy? We can, when we're executing sadhana bhakti, have the experience of rising, our consciousness rising to the mode of at least goodness, if not pure goodness. And how do we know if we're in goodness? Well, we're not in passionate ignorance. That's all we can say. There's some illumination. There's some higher understanding. There's some acceptance, we could say, varna dasa, of what we hear, what we heard. There's some experience or some realization of what we heard, therefore we accept it. Like, for instance, we're eternal. Now we hear that theoretically, but when we actually experience that, then there is more of an acceptance. So it's a gradual acceptance. So it's like, I can say that we're all eternal, but if I'm actually looking from inside and looking outside and experiencing myself as a spiritual soul, what to speak if I'm experiencing myself as a servant of our acharyas in disciple succession coming from Prabhupada, or Prabhupada, and our acharyas in disciple succession coming from Krishna, then I'm experiencing it more. It doesn't mean I've completely realized it, because as soon as I stop thinking about Prabhupada or this knowledge, then I may be under some material mode of nature. In any case, when one is under the superior energy, then one is no longer controlled by the three modes of nature. What to speak of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who's controlling time, who himself has created the three modes, and therefore giving the living entities the opportunity to perform karma, or when they're in good association, to perform devotional service. Now in this case, Indra clearly is an elevated demigod. I don't know Indra, so I can't vouch for him. But according to the description, generally speaking, he's a devotee of Krishna, even though he, in the Bhagavatam, seems to display him mostly when he gets into difficulty. Whether it's be the Indra Pooj raining down on Vrindavan, it doesn't put him into a very good light. I mean, after all, if someone tried to destroy Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan, you'd probably put him not as the most advanced devotee. Of course, at the end he comes and surrenders to Krishna, which most demons don't do, and performs abhishek to him with his airavata and sarabi cow from the heavenly planets. So most demons don't do that. So he's put into a little bit better light at the end of the Govardhan Pooj. But then he tries to steal the horses from Prithu Maharaj's sacrifice, which doesn't put him into a very good light either. But ultimately he makes amends and he, with Prithu Maharaj, and he reached an agreement. And here, some Indra, and there are a lot of Indras, there are innumerable universes, and every universe is an Indra. Some Indra, we don't know which Indra. It's not that this necessarily the same Indra commits this, you know, this is a really bad Indra. He tried to disturb Prithu Maharaj's sacrifice. He tried to kill the cows in Govardhan and the residents. And here he gets a garland from Durvasa Muni, puts it on the tusks of Airavata. Airavata tramples it, throws it off, gets cursed by Durvasa Muni, and the whole heavenly planet turns upside down. It's not necessarily the same Indra who's doing all these problems, molesting Ahala, the wife of great sage, and therefore getting eyes all over his body. It may be the same Indra, but it doesn't mention. Otherwise, we just got a really bad Indra this time. But it's probably more likely different Indras and different manifestations of Brahma. But the lessons are there. So what's the lesson? The lesson is, as soon as we become proud, of course we don't have to become proud, we're already proud. As Prabhupada told Giriraj Maharaj, when, after saying some philosophical point, and Giriraj Maharaj said, "Thank you very much to Prabhupada. I didn't understand that because I was in Maya." And Prabhupada laughed. He said, "You were in Maya?" He said, "You're always in Maya." Sometimes we understand we're in Maya, sometimes we become proud, we think we're actually out of Maya. But at least if we're less in Maya, then we can, ultimately we'll realize what Maya is. Even a great sage, like Markandeya Rishi, who lived for two lives of Brahma, not two lives, 2 days of Brahma, who had the personal darshan of Lord Narayan, he was inquisitive, what is Maya? And Lord Narayan, who's left his ashram, acknowledged the desire of Markandeya Rishi to find out what Maya was, and he had a very bad face. He gave a very bad look at Markandeya Rishi. Wrong question. And then it started to rain. Not like here in Ljubljana, but it rained for, I think, 100 years. And each one of those, it wasn't just a drop, it was like, each drop was like an elephant's tusk. And it filled up the whole universe with rain. And Markandeya Rishi, his ashram, was under deep, deep water. And he was trying to swim in that ocean of devastation for many thousands and thousands of years, sometimes in the cold, hunger, he was hungry, sometimes sharks would attack him, timangal fish would attack him, so he found out what Maya was. Finally, he got back after seeing Krishna on a banyan leaf, during the devastation, sucking on his big toe to find out how sweet his feet are. He got breathed in by Lord Vishnu, by Krishna actually. And then he found himself back in his ashram during more peaceful times. And then he was breathed out again by Krishna. And he was back in the ocean of devastation. Finally the waters subsided and he's back in his ashram. And he never asked the question again. It's crossed off his list of questions to ask Lord Vishnu. So the illusory energy is there, and Indra, the times when he's subjected to the illusory energy because of his karma, in other words, Indra is not a pure devotee, but he lives for there are 14 manus, I think 14 manus in one day of Lord Brahma. And he lives for one of those days of manu, which is like 180 million years or something. So he has a pretty good duration. So if he makes a mistake, it's not exactly, you know, most of his life is not a mistake. It's just that sometimes he makes a mistake, but it's a big mistake. So he made that mistake, and then the modes of material nature, what was prominent at that time, because that mistake was obviously in the mode of passion or ignorance. I mean, if someone gave you a garland, and you put it on your elephant, and the elephant knocked it off, most people wouldn't take it so seriously. I don't know. But Devasya Muni, he takes things seriously. So it was the wrong person. I mean, Indra, obviously, he was covered by some ignorance because he could have read Srimad Bhagavatam, found out how many other times Devasya Muni cursed people. Ambarish Maharaj, he was almost ready to curse Draupadi and the Pandavas. I mean, the Rasa Muni is not the person you want to fool around with. So obviously Indra was, due to intense pride, was covered by ignorance. And so he got the reaction for it. He dealt with the wrong person at the wrong time in the wrong way. And therefore, there was a very big reaction under the laws of time and the three modes. He had to get his karmic reaction, even though he's the king of heaven. And therefore the demons invaded the heavenly planets. But that's not how some things are supposed to be. Because the demigods, after Indra realized that he had made a mistake, hopefully, became a little repentant and they took shelter of Vishnu. So when the demigods take shelter of Vishnu, then as Brahma says here, Lord Brahma, that the mode of goodness becomes prominent. Wow. What's wrong with this clock there? Does anyone notice that it's 20 minutes fast? Or maybe we're all slow. So the mode of natures was turned into, well, because the demigods approached Vishnu, and Vishnu happens to control the universe, and what he goes, goes. What he wants to go, go. So when the demigods took shelter, then things will get changed around. But they get changed around in a very interesting way. Because he just doesn't come as soon as the demigods say, you know, can you go kill the demons? That's not how Vishnu works. He's not like a dog, you know, chained dog in a kennel. And when the demigods come, put him on his chain and unleash him and stick him, boy. That's not how Vishnu works. He knows the sincerity of the demigods. He knows what austerities the demons have done and therefore he takes it all into account and makes arrangements for his pastimes to show what actually it means to make progress in Krishna consciousness. Especially in this eighth canto, before we get to the tenth canto. Oh, I see why the time is 10 after 1. Because the clock stopped. It's still the time. Well, anyhow, I could go on until another. This class is beyond time according to that watch. I haven't even spoken for a second according to that. I knew my classes were transcendental. I didn't realize how much. So therefore what we learn from these lessons is that even we try to act in goodness, that Krishna is going to have to make some arrangements. It's not that we do something in goodness, we approach him, we pray to him, and we expect immediate result. Krishna, I pray to you, please, you know, do this for me. And it's been 5 minutes, and what's wrong with you? Now I pray to Brahma, please go to Svetadvip and wake up Vishnu. It seems to be that he's too asleep during Chaturmasya. Wake the Lord up. He's not aware of my prayers. Now even we pray like the demigods, and Krishna will make arrangements eventually to fulfill our desire. But that will depend on how strong is our desire. It's like a child says, Mother, I want to go and eat. Mother, I want to go to sleep. Mother, I want to go outside. The mother goes, what do you want to do? Fix your mind on something. I can't figure it out. So similarly, Tirena Bhakti Yogena Yajeta Purusha Para. When the demigods are fixed in their desire, then Vishnu helps them accordingly. And when the demons are fixed in their desire, then Vishnu or his representative, namely Shiva or Brahma, helps them. When Vrikasura is determined to get a benediction and cuts his flesh for a year and throws it into the fire, then Krishna's representative of Lord Shiva comes and benedicts him. Who's actually Vishnu in the form of Shiva, Well, I mean, it's not that Shiva is imitating, you know, disguised as Vishnu, or Vishnu is disguised as Shiva, but Shiva is an expansion of Krishna, Vishnu, for fulfilling certain desires. And he fulfills those desires of the demons. And he's fulfilling our demonic desires sometimes, if we're too, you know, too fixed on them. But then he's also going to give us the results of that. And when we're in the mode of goodness, he'll fulfill those desires. And what we're trying to do is be in the mode of Krishna consciousness, devotional service, and he'll immediately fulfill those desires. That is, become Krishna conscious. Everything else may take some time and depend upon other factors other than the fact that we simply had some desire. It depends on a number of factors, what our other desires are. Anyhow, it's a long discussion. And even though it's only still the same time, I'll stop here. But maybe I'll donate for this, the battery. Any questions? Yes.
So, if I understood correctly, the higher on the scale of the modes, our desires are more Krishna helps us to fulfill them.
No, not necessarily. Oh, I mean, if you're talking not in the modes,
just the spiritual desires.
Yeah, if we have a desire in the mode of goodness, then Vishnu will help fulfill that. If we have a desire in the mode of passion, then Brahma will help fulfill that. If we have a desire in the mode of ignorance, then Lord Shiva will help fulfill that. So in the material world, according to our desire, then we'll get the result. If you want to go to the heavenly planets, Vishnu, the super soul, will help you. If you want to go to back to Ljubljana in your next birth, then, you know, the demigods will help. And if you want to go to hell, then Lord Shiva will give you all opportunity. Or just become a demon in some, you know, lower planet or something. But if we want to become Krishna conscious, then Krishna himself will personally help. Samaham sarvabhuteshu name dveshtu stene priyaha ye bhajanti mamtu bhakta maya te teshu chapyaham. I envy no one, nor am I partial to anyone. I am equal to all, but whoever renders to me in devotion, service, I am a friend to him and he's a friend to me. So the only real way out of the material world is surrender to Krishna. Otherwise, we can get a better place in the material world or a worse one, and Krishna will fulfill those desires, either personally or through his representatives. Anything else? Nothing. Wow, okay. Out of practice, our audience has disappeared. Yes.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the class, Maharaj. So a few days ago, there was a purport to the verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Where Srila Prabhupada states that, I mean, it's connected with this desire, desires matter. And Srila Prabhupada says that by devotional service, you also get our material desires fulfilled. So in any way, we should just serve, like this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, Sakama, Akama, Karma,
Karma, Sarvakama, yes. Mokshakama, Udaridi, Tivrena, according to the intensity, Tivrena, Bhakti Yogena, Yajeta Purusha Pura.
Okay. Yes, so Srila Prabhupada quotes that verse, and also he says that, explains that we should just engage devotional service, by that you will also fulfill our material desires. So my question is, isn't it that people turn to demigods in order to fulfill their material desires because Krishna is known as one who is independent, in the sense he it's up to his will to fulfill or not fulfill desires of a devotee. Of a devotee, I'm speaking about the devotee. So how to understand that, and what happens with material desires of devotees? I mean,
well, Krishna makes an effort to get rid of them. So if you want to be a devotee, then you have to take the chance that he may not fulfill the desire. If you want to approach Krishna simply out of desire to get material desires fulfilled, you've gone to the wrong person too, because he may or may not fulfill those desires. Therefore, when Rikrasura approached Narada Muni, who's the best person to fulfill my desire, then Narada Muni understood that because your desire is in a mode of ignorance, Lord Vishnu will not fulfill it, better to worship Lord Shiva.
Therefore, I was surprised by that purport, by that sentence in the purport of Srila Prabhupada, where he's saying, also by turning to Krishna, we get our material desires fulfilled.
Some of them. Like, some of them. I mean, after all, we eat prasadam. So that's also, it's, prasadam is spiritual, and our eating prasadam could be devotional service, but it may be mixed in with we're hungry. We like, want to satisfy our hunger.
Like needs, actually. This falls into category of needs.
Yeah, I mean, we could fulfill needs. We could do them in Krishna consciousness with prasadam. We can also do them without Krishna consciousness. But nonetheless, Krishna is giving us the prasadam to eat.
Thank you. The question from Vala Biknapen. Sometimes it is said we shouldn't endeavor for liberation, but at the same time it is said that devotional service starts only really from the stage of liberation. So shouldn't we want to be liberated to do really devotional service?
Of course we want to be liberated. Otherwise, if devotional service starts at the platform of liberation, then why would we want to be liberated? But our liberation is achieved by the process of devotional service. We're not simply striving for liberation, we're trying to serve Krishna without material desire. And that when we do that, then we're liberated. Because after all, liberation is defined as Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma, Nishoshiti, Nakangshiti, Samaksarveshu Bhuteshu, Madhvaktim Lavate Param. When we give up hankering for material things, and lamenting over the fact that we're not getting them or we lost them. And when we treat all living entities as Krishna's eternal servants and try to help them become Krishna conscious, then we become liberated. So we become liberated by, instead of hankering for material things, we hanker for Krishna. Instead of lamenting over material things, we lament over the fact that we're not Krishna conscious. Instead of treating people as material objects, we treat them as Krishna's eternal servants and serve them to help them become Krishna conscious. So that's how we become liberated.
Thank you.
Yes. One more question here. You're holding them. Her.
Thank you. Thank you, Maharaj. My question is actually related to your class yesterday. If you would kindly tell us about which year and month it was that Srila Prabhupada spoke to all the wealthy people and said, you know, real success is to come under Krishna's internal energy. I would like to read that particular conversation.
Do you have the book? I think it's Let There Be a Temple.
By Giriraj Maharaj?
Yeah.
No, I don't. Do you have one copy?
Yeah, I have a copy.
Would you lend it to me?
I'm still reading it.
Oh, okay.
But they're in the shop, aren't they? Oh, there's a book upstairs. Exactly where it is, I can't remember, but it's around page 400 or something like that.
Okay. Would it be mentioned in the Leelamrita? Prabhupada Leelamrita?
No.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, thank you very much. Khwala, Grantaraj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.